This review of pharmacology for step one would not be complete without at least some description of what might be anticipated regarding toxicology. The items that we've discussed regarding the individual drugs, of course, have always had at least one component that concerns adverse effects and toxicity. So one has to be aware that, you know, we've already talked an awful lot about toxicology by virtue of talking about adverse effects or overdoses, these types of things. We have not really talked about, you know, metal poisoning and antidotes in a specific way. And I thought one way of actually providing you with some, like, rather quick way to scan toxicology would be to put together some of the signs and symptoms of toxicity for specific drug groups, and also include with those signs and symptoms the idea of what might be the key interventions that one would apply. I call these little, if you like, summaries, toxic syndromes. And so I'd like to discuss some of those or review some of those with you, and then perhaps a little bit on heavy metal poisoning, and perhaps a little bit on use of antidotes in toxicology. Overall, on an exam, in terms of pharmacology questions, perhaps just 1, 2, 3, 4% would concern toxicological items. It varies a little bit. If you also include adverse drugs, of course, you can expand that quite a lot. So I'm expecting that you would want to have reviewed our adverse effects as we've been going through the different drug groups. So here goes with our first toxic syndrome. You're very familiar with this. This is a toxic syndrome that I'm repeating for the very simple reason that it's worth it. And I want you to know about the cholinesterase inhibitors like nystagmine and physostigmine and pyridostigmine, and what might happen with overdose of those, which I use clinically. Most cases of overdoses with ACHE inhibitors are not usually with the clinical application of these agents, but with the commercial application of these agents in terms of their use as insecticides. We use both carbamates and organophosphates as insecticides very, very freely in the North American countries, and on occasion you'll see a patient who has been exposed to these insecticides and shows the classical symptoms of acetylcholinesterase poisoning. It's asked about quite frequently on these examinations. So I'm expecting you to know some of the symptoms that you would get by increasing acetylcholine at all sites where it's a neurotransmitter, both in the periphery and the central nervous system. So all you have to say to yourself, of course, is our usual word here in terms of our features of dumbbells. So cholinesterase inhibition goes along with dumbbells, the diarrhea, the urination, the meiosis, the bronchoconstriction, the excitation both in the brain and at the skeletal muscle, the lacrimation, the salivation, and of course the sweating. So dumbbells it is, and I'm hoping you can pick that up in a clinical vignette. What are you going to do about it? Provide respiratory support, and you're going to use atropine in terms of the offsetting the muscarinic receptor stimulation, and you're going to use the regenerator of the enzyme, pralidoxime or 2-PAM, to see if you can't push the organophosphate off acetylcholinesterase. The second toxic symptom, again, relates back to autonomic pharmacology. What happens when you block muscarinic receptors? How's that going to come about? Well, it can come about from any of the clinically useful muscarinic blocking agents in excess, from atropine through to benztropine, etc. It can also come about because many drugs that are not conventionally categorized as a muscarinic blocking drug happen to have such properties. Let me illustrate. Diphenhydramine, the antihistamine, in overdose causes marked muscarinic receptor blocking action. Diphenhydramine is an over-the-counter drug. Many muscarinic blocking drugs are present over-the-counter, or at least let me change that. Many drugs that have muscarinic blocking activity are available over-the-counter. You know, tricyclic antidepressants have muscarinic receptor blocking action, and that can be contributory to their adverse effects well. And I mentioned to you that plant products often can contain muscarinic blocking activity. In fact, the very plant belladonna is gave the name, of course, originally to this whole class of drugs in terms of atropine, Atropa belladonna. And also the seeds of Jimson weed. So look for increases in heart rate and blood pressure because you're blocking muscarinic receptors. You can't sweat. Now remember that the sweating is a muscarinic receptor activation, but it is through the sympathetic nervous system. This is that one big exception where we said it's sympathetic in terms of innervation, but cholinergic in terms of the interaction with receptor. So you're going to have a hot, dry skin. You're almost certainly to be delirious and throwing hallucinations. And what you're going to do about it is largely symptomatic in terms of controlling cardiovascular symptoms, the hypothermia, bring the body temperature down, and possibly the use of the cholinesterase inhibitor physostigmine. Why physostigmine and not neostigmine? Neostigmine won't cross the blood-brain barrier. See, it's a quaternary amine. Physostigmine will. It's a tertiary amine. So that would be the more appropriate drug in this instance. CNS stimulants, well, we tend to expect anxiety and agitation with such drugs. They're often very likely to cause a warm and sweaty skin. Hypothermia can sort of occur. I told you to look in the patient's eyes. Mydriasis is very characteristic of overdose with a CNS stimulant, as would be sympathetic stimulation, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure. And central nervous system effects, well, very bizarre behavior on many instances. And in real gross overdose, quite likely to see seizures. So you're going to control the cardiovascular symptoms, bring the body temperature down, use anticonvulsants if they are needed, quieten the patient with probably parenteral benzodiazepines or possibly even antipsychotic drugs. So this is what you can anticipate with the CNS stimulants like amphetamine and overdoses of methylphenidate, a number of drugs that would fit into that category. Opioids, remember, these are downers. They cause sedation and lethargy. They'll lower blood pressure and decrease heart rate. Hypoventilation occurs, and this is what ultimately leads to death in terms of respiratory failure. They all, with the exception of meperidine, cause meiosis and will put you into a comatose state. Ventilatory support is very important here, and of course you have naloxone. Naloxone's the opioid receptor antagonist, has a short duration of action IV, and therefore you have to give it more than once. SSRIs, the serotonin syndrome, agitation, confusion, hallucinations, muscle rigidity and hypothermia, heart rate goes up, blood pressure goes up, and you throw a seizure. What causes the serotonin syndrome? Well, in general, you have to have as one component an SSRI. Obviously, that's the type of drug that blocks the reuptake of serotonin. But many other drugs can be contributory to that. The first that was demonstrated clinically was an MAO inhibitor, phenelzine. I would take it that most MAO inhibitors would do that. Subsequently, tricyclic antidepressants were shown to cause the serotonin syndrome when used with an SSRI. We've seen it with meperidine. We've seen it with diphenoxylate. We've seen it with MDMA, ecstasy, etc. So there's quite a lot of drugs there that can do that. How are you going to handle it? Well, again, symptomatically in terms of the hypothermia, anticonvulsants if you're throwing a seizure. Cyproheptadine, a serotonin antagonist, has also been used here because obviously you're getting excessive serotonergic activity. And other drugs that might quieten the patient, the antipsychotics or the benzodiazepines, would possibly be alternatives here. Aspirin we've dealt with hitherto in terms of the symptoms of overdose toxicity. We have this rather bizarre set of circumstances which include, you know, a metabolic and respiratory types of effects on acid-base balance and electrolytes. And really one has to look at the individual patient to know precisely what it is that you will do in that regard. One thing you will do is make sure that you have good ventilation and that the patient does not get so hot. You'll bring the patient's temperature down. You'll readjust electrolytes. You'll readjust the pH in the blood. And if you can, you will try to get rid of salicylates. And you can do that by changing the pH in the urine. if all else fails, you can use hemodialysis, and that pulls out salicylates as well. But certainly this can be life-threatening because of the very marked effects on acid-base balance. Tricyclic antidepressants, I mentioned earlier that we get the symptoms of the three C's, the cardiotoxicity, the coma, and the convulsions. These are tough drugs in overdose because they've got so many different pharmacological actions. You know, they block alpha receptors, they block muscarinic receptors, they lower the seizure threshold, they are cardiotoxic, prolonging the QT interval, quinidine-like action on the heart, and the outcome with overdose is not always predictable here. So once again, we're really dealing with symptomatic management. The hypothermia that comes from muscarinic blockade has to be handled, the seizures have to be handled, and of course any changes, for example, in cardiac function may be need to be handled, including possible antiarrhythmic drug use. The summary of toxic syndromes is shown in the text under item section 8-6, and you can review that at your leisure. Now, what about heavy metal poisoning? As a general rule, there are sort of four heavy metal poisons that people want you to know about, arsenic sometimes and mercury sometimes. I'm going to suggest that you put most of your effort on iron and lead poisoning. Lead is always a very likely thing to come up. Iron comes up not commonly, but when it does come up, it's most frequently seen in children. Children get into mum's supplementary iron tablets, and when they ingest just a few of them, they can have very marked effects on the GI tract. You may be up to actually even make the diagnosis by seeing what's happening in terms of what's coming out of their mouth. If something blue is coming out of their mouth, tinged with red, perhaps blood, and perhaps even coming out the other end of the body, then you could make a pretty good presumptive guess that the kid had been swallowing iron tablets. Get them out if you can get them out, obviously. We have clearly a life-threatening situation here, depending on how much iron has come in, because this necrotizing bloody diarrhea with hematemesis, which is throwing up blood, etc., shock-like state, dyspnea, etc., coma, is life-threatening. So again, try to get the drug out, try to do what you can in terms of symptomatic management, and your antidote is deferoxamine, known commercially as Desferal, a chelating agent that can bind to iron and hopefully prevent iron from inhibiting the multiple enzymes in our cells that it can interact with. Lead is a good one to keep your eye on. Lead poisoning is quite common, much more common actually than iron poisoning. And the reason I think it's of interest for examinations is because it has multi-system effects. Here you've got your chance to see changes in heme synthesis, because iron certainly can do that. It inhibits there. Here you've got your chance for patients who have wrist or foot drop because of the peripheral neuropathy that lead poisoning leads to. Renal damage, the proteinuria, the failure, etc., liver damage, hepatitis, and of course in children that are exposed to lead during their development, we see the problems of mental retardation. The term pica, you may recall, is often associated with lead poisoning. Its actual literal meaning is the ingestion of non-food substances, and it's usually applied to the idea of a child, you know, picking paint off a window, a painted window, and putting it in their mouth. And although we've not used lead-based paints in the United States for 40 years, there are plenty of our buildings that still have lead-based paints at the bottom of a series of paint coats, and they can pick that off and swallow it, and lead gets into the body and can cause very marked effects on mental development. Also, lead, especially lead that turns up in the water supplies, is dangerous from the standpoint of decreasing fertility, and when you do get pregnant, there may be a greater incidence of stillbirths. So I think this is a nice test item, you know, lead poisoning. So refresh your memory about that. What are you going to do about it? Well, at least in children, you're probably going to consider Saxima. Saxima is a form of dimercaprol, or BAL, that actually is orally bioavailable, and that's a reasonable thing to give to a child who's suffering from lead poisoning. Dimercaprol will probably be used in the adult patient who suffers from lead poisoning. And so what I would suggest you do is check out items 8-7 in the text, because I've summarized the features of lead poisoning and other heavy metal poison for you there. The last section of which we intend to do are antidotes. There are a number of situations where you might just get one question and all of a sudden they ask you the antidote for a particular type of situation. So I always suggest to people that they actually know this by rote. And I start with activated charcoal. You know, you could almost guess that activated charcoal would be very good for nearly all oral poisonings. And that's true. But the things that it won't work on, number one, is iron. It doesn't work in iron poisoning. It doesn't work in cyanide poisoning. Now, if you refer back to where we were discussing nitrates, by the way, you'll see what it is we do in cyanide poisoning. Do you remember? We looked at nitrates and the use of nitrates to form methemoglobin, which binds cyanide. So I have no intention of going over cyanide again. I'm just pointing you backwards. If you want to look at cyanide poisoning and its management, there it is under the cardiovascular drugs, under nitrates. Lithium won't be taken out by activated charcoal, and nor will acids or alkalis or corrosives, etc. But you know, that leaves an awful lot of drugs, doesn't it, that might be bound by activated charcoal. Well worthwhile considering. Well, acetaminophen, that's acetylcysteine or Mucomist. That's the antidote for poisoning to prevent or to offset the liver toxicity. Deferoxamine, iron or iron salts, that's a fairly standard thing. Dimercaprol would be used in lead poisoning, but also if you were thinking of using guesswork here, you could add a few other things in there like mercury, arsenic, and gold. Succima for mild lead poisoning, and usually in children, that's the agent that you would use. The use of EDTA is quite common in metal poisoning. Actually, I would say that this is more active in terms of a range of metal poisons than any other type of chelating agent. This is ethylene diamino tetraacetic acid, EDTA, and has to be used parenterally. And I suppose if you were into the guessing game and couldn't remember a chelating agent, you'd have a better chance, really, of saying, well, I'll use EDTA than perhaps, if you didn't know at all. Oxygen, well, that's an antidote for carbon monoxide, isn't it? Carbon monoxide poisoning from heaters in winter months, etc., is quite common, or from the back of exhaust of a car is quite common, and forms carboxyhemoglobin, and it behooves us to get oxygen in, even at positive pressures, to actually change that situation and revert to the oxygenated form of hemoglobin. Penicillamine, we mentioned that drug under the area of drugs that might be useful in rheumatoid arthritis, but its famous position, of course, is as cupramine. Cupramine is chelates copper, and it would be used in copper poisoning and in Wilson's disease with elevated copper. It doesn't restrict itself to that particular iron or metal, but certainly that would be the one I'd pick out first. So once again, if you want to see a summary of these things, they're in table 8.8 in the text.